Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Coffee and Co-Sleeping. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Adriana. And today we're talking all about redefining the village and what it means to have a village in general. We hear so often that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, make sure you have yours, make sure you're connected, but not all of us know what that looks like or know where to start in building a village, or can rely on the people we thought we could rely on once we have our child. I know Amanda and I have definitely experienced a shift in what we thought our villages would look like and what our village actually turned out to be. So we're here to talk all about that today. Amanda, we haven't really connected much in the last couple of weeks. Life has been crazy. We just got off the phone and it was like, we need to like set aside 2 hours for just a major life update because we haven't been able to connect.
Mm-hmm. I know. I was like, tell me everything that has gone on in your life recently. And yeah, we've had a crazy couple weeks here. I know you have as well. And it kind of does tie into a bit of our village. I know here we've had, you know, the motorcycle club that my husband's in, they've had like a lot of events. So we've had a lot of people kind of in and out of our house. We've been really busy with these events, which is kind of like our village. You know, we are so far from family. So when my husband, you know, became a member of this club, we've really connected with the members in it, and they've kind of become our family. You know, we were kind of missing that living so far away from home. So we really were able to connect so much to the people that we spend so much of our time with. And I know, I feel like when we were talking earlier, it was like every time you said something, it's like, all right, wait, hold on, I got to tell you about this. And it's like, I don't remember what I've told you and what I've not. And I say all the time that I don't really talk on the phone to anybody, but you and my grandmother are the only people that I ever talk on the phone with. So I got these new headphones, and every time I like hit the wrong button on them, it automatically calls the last person that I've called, which is always you, because I don't talk on the phone. I'm like, no, it's 3 a.m. where she is. Hang up, hang up.
And this is actually a really good point that you're making right now as far as like our phone communication. First of all, I think a lot of people are steering away from phone calls and moving towards like text, Instagram, sending each other like quick reels or funny memes to keep in touch. And I understand, like, for the sake of how busy everyone's lives are, that's like an easy, quick way to let someone know that you're thinking about them or to connect with them over a shared laugh. But I really do miss just like being able to have a conversation, even if it is once every 2 weeks, with someone you're close to. That connection that's like starting to almost become annoying for people. I mean, I have people in my life who are like, don't call me, text me. And like, I get it, but like, I'm the kind of person who needs like that bit of a more intimate connection with people in my life that I'm close to. And I love that we have that. And I think for me, as far as a village goes, I've come to really appreciate and be so much more grateful for the people in my life like you, that I'm able to have those more grounding, intimate, you know, deep or remote, whatever they need to be, conversations, that you're open to that and that I'm able to have that with you, that fills my cup. A village doesn't always have to be, you know, what you think of in those early newborn days, someone coming over, helping cook or bringing over a meal or, you know, taking out the trash while you breastfeed. That's all wonderful and it's great. But what a village looks like changes after the newborn phase. You know, we hear a lot about all the ways moms need help in those early days. I am right there with you all. We do need it. And there are so many ways in which we could be supported that would make the early postpartum phase easier. But we don't talk a lot about how that village shifts and the types of support systems or things that we need once our children start to grow and get older. And for me, it's really connection. You know, we've talked a lot about motherhood being isolating. And in some ways it is. In some ways, Aiden is the absolute joy of my life. And I wouldn't trade, maybe some moments with him I would, but most I would not. And I love him more than I can describe. We all feel that way about our children. But, you know, not speaking to an adult for a couple of days, you start to get a little in your own head. So for me, a part of who comprises my village right now are the people that I can have those grounding conversations with. And you're right there. You're top three. You're one of the only people I can do that with. So
if you still had MySpace, I would be in your top eight.
Yeah.
Is that what you're telling me?
100%.
And that was something when you and I first partnered together, that was something you said right off the bat. You were like, the way I communicate is through phone calls. And you're like, you don't have to always answer. And, you know, you, I feel like, do a great job. Once you and I got closer, I've started, like, when I reach out to someone, I'll say, like, hey, if you're in the space to receive this, if you, you know, can handle me talking about whatever. And I think that, you know, is something that's so great, because you're right. Not everyone wants to talk on the phone. Not everyone has the time for it, but we've really moved away from that. And I think social media, you brought up such a great point with, like, tagging people and sending people stuff. I feel like the more I share on social media, the less people reach out to me, because they have a false sense of, like, the illusion that they know what's going on in our lives because they're seeing me post so much about it. And then if I kind of, like, ghost on Instagram, people will start reaching out and be like, oh, like, we haven't talked. What's new? Like, what's going on? But, you know, either way, we're not really talking. You just think because you're seeing pictures, you know what's going on.
Absolutely. And something else that I wanted to add about social media is people catch a lot of flack. We complain about it too. You know, you only see the highlight reel on Instagram, or you only see the highlight reel on Facebook. I understand why we're looking more to share the harder moments or the harder times and being more candid about those things on our social media platform so that people can relate and see that not everything is perfect. While I do understand that side of the coin, I'm also generally a more private person. And so there's a lot that I just don't want to share with the world. There's a lot that I just don't want to share with, like, my 900 followers on my Instagram. I just don't, you know, there are things that are private and that I really only want to discuss with my inner circle. So yeah, absolutely. I think when we're showing a certain side of our lives, which I'm not against, if you want to show the highlight reel, I get that. You don't owe anybody the more personal moments. It's just a way for us to feel connected. But if your way of feeling more connected is with your inner circle and more privately, I'm here for that too. I completely relate to that, which is why I think that as your children grow, what you need and how you need to be supported can look very differently. And right now for me, what fills my cup is knowing that I have those 2 to 3 people that I can call, really run some serious stuff by, and get that support.
I mean, yeah, that's what we were just doing before we hit record too. And I wanted to talk a bit about the saying, it takes a village. I know it's an old proverb and we hear it so often. And I feel like it was almost shoved, like, in my face a bit when I was pregnant. A lot of people saying, make sure you have a strong village, or make sure you have a good support system. It takes a village to raise children. And I feel like people come out a lot, you know, right when you give birth, and everyone's kind of, you know, wanting to hold the baby, but no one's really holding the mom or lifting her up. So I think that saying, I go back and forth with it. I feel like at moments in my motherhood journey, when I don't have a strong village and I don't feel supported, I don't like the saying. I'm kind of like, oh my God, I get it. Like, I'm doing the best I can, because we're kind of forced to build a community at our time in our lives when we really don't have the time or the resources to do so. You know, when you're up all hours of the night, breastfeeding, changing diapers, you know, returning back to work, pumping, the last thing I have on my mind is, let me, you know, connect with some like-minded moms, or let me go to the park and find a mom that I can relate to. It's almost like dating. Like, people don't have the energy to do that. So, but when I'm in, like, a season of my life, like right now, for example, I feel really well supported. I have a really good, you know, circle of friends that have become family. You know, all of our family physically is really far away, but I feel like we're at good points. We're all, you know, with all of them. So I like the saying. I'm like, yeah, like, I have so much help. It does take a village. So I wanted to hear your thoughts on it, if you like it, or if you think it kind of sets moms up for disappointment.
I think, similarly to you, I understand why the saying exists. I think holding the mother and not just the baby, I understand why that saying exists too. I think in order for a mom to fully experience the beauty of motherhood, the easiest way for that to happen is if she's supported. And even if you're fully supported emotionally and you have financial help or you have physical help, there are still going to be hardships in motherhood. That is so much harder, and that is so far amplified when you don't have that village. So I think it does take a village, maybe not to raise a child. It can take one person to raise a child. I think it takes a village for a mother to fully embrace motherhood to the fullest extent, if that makes sense.
It does. I like that little shift looking at it that way. Especially you as a single parent, like it right now, it is one person raising your child and there's nothing wrong with that. So I think kind of saying the whole, you know, needing a village, it can kind of get people in their head and, you know, just be consumed with more mom guilt that we really don't need. And I know I've said before on the podcast that I kind of thought my village, you know, years ago before I ever had children, I thought that it would be like grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins because that's how I was raised. You know, my dynamic of living with my grandparents, spending every day with them. I mean, they were my parents. They, you know, cousins were at our house. Having that close, tight-knit family, I thought that's what I would have because that's all that, you know, I've known. And then moving away from family, I thought by the time that we had children, we would be back in Massachusetts living right next door to my sister. And, you know, we decided a long time ago, that's not really what we want. So we've kind of had to like brainstorm like, okay, well then what's kind of next? What does this look like for us? What does our support system look like? Because my husband and I are used to it always just being him and I against the world. And we quickly realized, hey, sometimes we need help. We need somebody to support us. So that was kind of a big hurdle to come over because I thought for the longest time that I was setting my daughter up for some kind of failure and disappointment. Like, sorry, your cousins don't live close, but I've learned that doesn't mean that she's not going to have people that she's close to. They aren't blood family. You know, we haven't known them our whole life, but in many ways, I feel closer and more connected to the people that I have here because of the physical presence that they have in my daughter's life.
Yeah, and I love how you've discussed how friends have become family for you in a lot of situations, that some of the people who you might not have even expected to come to bat for you, mm-hmm. for Kennedy, for your family, really have.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, it's interesting, and I said this the other day to a friend when I was talking, me and my friend Devin, we actually have gotten a lot closer since Kennedy has been born, which is interesting because they don't have children. So when you have friends who don't have kids, I feel like after, I mean, it's happened to me personally, some of my friends who are a bit younger than me or don't have children yet, after I had my daughter, we just had different priorities. You know, I couldn't go out at 9 o'clock at night or do the things they wanted to. And I really didn't want to either. So we just kind of drifted apart. We're still, you know, like cordial with each other. Nothing happened. We just kind of drift apart. Whereas my friend Devin, we kind of got a lot closer after my daughter was born. So that's really nice to see, you know, that's who my daughter probably spends the most time with and sees the most other than, you know, me and my husband. So having that dynamic has really been great for us.
For me, as a single parent who's solely raising my son, meaning in terms of parenthood, I'm the only parent raising my son. My village has really been my immediate family, and the gratitude I have for that is, I mean, immeasurable. It's my mom, my dad, my sister. We're all together. I do have a brother also. He lives in New York City. We're right outside of Boston. So they are incredibly close with my son and have a major hand in raising him. And we're his village, we're his family, we're his people. And I'm extraordinarily grateful for that. I wouldn't have expected that it would turn out this way, but it has. And I don't feel like there's something that my son is missing. I'm extremely grateful for that. I have spent the last 4 months in my home country where I was born in Bosnia. I'm in the capital. I'm in Sarajevo and I'm here for another month and a half. And I've been alone for a month. So my family was here for a period of time. We spend summers here, at least a part of the summer. And now it's just me. August, it's just been me and Aiden and I. So it's been really a big shift in truly being completely alone with him. I've learned a lot about myself. I've learned mainly where I need more work, not just as a mom, but as a person, like where not only I might need more work, but where I'm missing something, where I need to start to fill my own cup a bit more. And I mean, I know that goes a bit more into self-care, but in regards to a village, I've noticed like I really need to set aside time to connect with people that I'm close to not keep something bottled up or in my head or to ruminate. But if there's something that I do feel like I need a little bit of support with, recognizing that and seeking it. So my village right now is remote. It's virtual. You know, everyone's far away. And there's a 6-hour time change between myself and those I'm closest with. So it's taught me how to tap into what's going on with me a little bit more so that I'm able to seek that support. Because if I am ruminating, if I am holding things to myself, it becomes a lot harder to be the type of mom I want to be for Aiden. But I have realized how much the physical aspect of having help, having people to even relieve you for an hour so you can take a shower by yourself, how critical it is. And I think about all the moms who don't have that and how taxing it is to truly be responsible for another human being physically, financially, emotionally, spiritually, in every sense of the word, for that to fall to one person. While it's possible, it's extremely taxing. And that doesn't mean that we don't love our children. It just means that it's motherhood is hard when you don't have support, even if it's just emotional. So I'm trying to lean more on that virtual support now that Aiden and I truly are alone. But I am glad that I got to see this side of single parenthood. And I'm purposely staying longer to continue to explore what life looks like as truly a duo, Aiden and I.
And I think so many moms, whether a single parent or not, can relate to that, having a virtual village being so strong. And that's really why Coffee and Co-Sleeping was founded. You know, in the midst of a pandemic, even if you had a strong physical village, you weren't able to connect with them in the way that we were used to. So knowing that there is a community of moms that, you know, are kind of going through the same things as you, who also need the support, you know, kind of walking through motherhood hand in hand with people, even if you don't know them. And I know, like, on Instagram, there's so many people that I connect with in DMs, and I've built friendships with these people, and they live, you know, in different parts of the world. And these aren't people that I've met firsthand, but I know what's going on with their children, and they know kind of what's going on in my lives all through social media. So I think, well, I know I spend a lot of time knocking social media. It also can be such a powerful tool to connect us with one another, with people that we may never have known if it wasn't for, you know, these apps and social media.
I want to speak a little more generally too on cultural norms. I know we have listeners from all over the world. I'm currently in Bosnia, you're in the US. And, you know, I just wanted to touch upon the fact that this is a generalization. Again, I want to be very clear. I'm not talking about all cases here. But in many cases, in the US, there is this sort of hyper push for independence and for, you know, building yourself up, building your family up, doing what you can for the people around you, and sort of being self-sufficient in that way. That's highly praised. I think we sort of push and seek independence from our children and from ourselves from a very young age. You know, there is that kind of like, okay, you're 18, time to go, you know, bird leaves the nest sort of mentality. And here in Bosnia, it's very much not like that. I'm not comparing and saying one's better than the other. But if we're talking about a village, I mean, here the norm is to live at home until you're married, you know, until you meet someone that you feel serious enough to be married to. Maybe you, you know, things have shifted a bit. Maybe you lived together before that marriage, but you're at the very least engaged. So there is this sort of sense of family ties that never quite go away or diminish with age. You know, there are many families who live, if not in the same house on different floors, in the same neighborhood, or, you know, within a 15-minute walk of each other, or at the very most on the other side of the city, which is like a 15, 20-minute drive, and that's considered far. So there is this sense of the family stays together and helps raise children. I know that's a little more traditional, but it's been really interesting to see that dynamic here and how that in some ways truly does relieve pressure off of a mother when she knows that she's kind of cocooned in the bosom of either her family or husband's family or both. You know, it's like a team effort. Raising a child is a bit of a team effort. There are a lot of things I could say about how things are done here that I can't imagine doing myself, but we'll keep that for another episode. In terms of the village, you know, that is strong here, and it's a part of the cultural norm. It's a part of, you know, it's just almost like you have one. You have a built-in village. You get to decide whether or not it's healthy for your child, but you have that there, and everybody's doing that. You know, everybody has family as childcare and can run up the stairs, and there's grandma and grandpa, you know? So it's very different. In the US, I think there is this push for, like, buy a house, make sure you have your own, look at your future, look at, you know, savings, money, retirement. We're thinking ahead. We're always thinking ahead. I always say, I wish there was a little bit of an in-between between the lifestyle here and the US. Is there somewhere where that exists? I don't know. But I do think in different cultures, the emphasis is different.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because I feel like growing up, I never had like the picture perfect American family, because my mom got divorced when I was very young. And I feel like it wasn't so widely talked about. Like, I feel like all of my friends had mom, dad, and like two kids, and they lived, you know, together. And I remember looking at that and being like, oh, there's not many families that look like mine. Like, we had our mom, but we also lived with our grandparents. And my grandparents, like I said, really were responsible for the day-to-day tasks and really caring for my sister and I. And, but in other countries, that's so common for multiple generations to live together, that if my family, you know, was picked up and moved to Europe, they would be like, duh, like, they wouldn't think that, you know, an event happened for us to all be living together. It would just be the norm. And the experiences that I had, you know, with my grandparents, those are things that a lot of my peers, you know, as a child, I was kind of like, oh, this is, you know, my dynamic looks different. But now as an adult, I'm so grateful for that, because my friends and my peers didn't have those same experiences that I had living with my grandparents. So rather than as a kid, you know, maybe thinking it was a disadvantage, I realize how much now, you know, what an advantage I was at. And I think it's such a great point when you talk about like just running upstairs and grabbing, you know, a grandparent or something like that. I feel like me personally, I've struggled so much with asking for help. But if you have that help almost like built in, like you have your community living with you, you never really have to stress about like, oh, can I ask them to, you know, sit with her for a minute so I can go shower or do this? It's almost kind of like expected. Like, not that you expect their help, but they, you don't really have to ask for it, because it's just offered up. It's just what's seen as normal. It's not that you're asking for help. They're being a grandparent. They want to do it. That's why you guys all live together. That's why you live close, for that support. And I wish there was kind of an in-between. I don't know if I could live in one house now with like three generations. I know I definitely couldn't live with my parents, but like kind of having, I mean, my sister, you know, bought a house in the neighborhood that we grew up and lived right behind my grandmother. So she kind of had that. It was more my sister keeping an eye on her and less my grandmother keeping an eye on her and the kids. But it's interesting now, because now that I've, you know, lived so far away for so long, I don't know if I could ever picture – it's weird, because I never could picture myself living away from home. You know, I thought that I would live next door, raise all of our kids together, have the life that I grew up with. And now that I've been away from it for so long, I don't know if I can ever picture myself living close again to the traditional, like, blood family. Not for, you know – I would love for all of us to be close, but I just don't know if I could see myself living in the area that they live in anymore. So we're going to have to continue to redefine our village and what that looks like as far as, you know, trips back and forth, communicating virtually, you know, doing what we can to stay connected. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, I live by the saying, if they wanted to, they would. Like, I feel like if people want to be in your lives, they will do every effort to do so, regardless of, you know, any type of distance. They're going to do what they want to, you know, to make an effort to be involved in your life and your children's lives.
I love that. And, you know, when your village, or when life in general, doesn't look the way you imagined, you know, certainly for me, I did not think I would be single parenting at almost 35 years old, and split up from my husband. And this isn't what I had imagined for myself. So when that happens, I think you and I, Amanda, talked about there being kind of this like survival mode period. But once you kind of come through that, there's always a sort of reflective period where you look back and it's like, oh, I didn't realize that I've learned this, or I'm stronger than I thought, or I'm, you know, more emotional than I thought. Maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe I want to tap into that a little bit more. There's a lot I've learned kind of once the dust has, I don't want to say it's settled, but it settled a bit. And once that happens, you can kind of step back and take a look at what's been learned. Everything's a lesson. I know that sounds so cheesy, and I'm not here to like try to sound philosophical, but honestly, everything truly is a lesson. And when life doesn't look the way you imagined, or your village doesn't look the way you imagined, what I've learned through that is that I really want to give myself more to those relationships that have lent themselves to me. So there have been a few relationships in my life with friends and family where people have really shown me, like you mentioned, that they're there, that they check in without me having to. And that is worth more than anything. It almost feels like the only way to repay that is to also show up for those people like they've shown up for me. So a village doesn't have to be big to be meaningful.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because I have this in my notes in like caps to talk about, because I feel like over the past really like year, my family, we've experienced a lot of trauma. I actually started going back to therapy, and that was one of the first questions the therapist asked. She's like, have you experienced any trauma lately? And I was like, oh, like this week or this year? Like, where do I start? And I feel like when, you know, those less than ideal experiences kind of happen, you're really able to see kind of who's in your corner or not, and who's, you know, who's going to rally for you and who's going to be there. And my husband and I had this conversation last month, like looking at the things that we've been through this past year, we're really like moving forward. The people that were there for us and really kind of, you know, showed who they are to us at those not so great times, when we're kind of rejoicing in the greater moments of life and the joy and the happiness that we hope, you know, will come, those are the ones that are going to be the first people to kind of share that, if that makes sense. Because and it's hard, because I feel like the type of friend that I am, like we were saying that before we started recording, like I kind of want to know everything that's going on in your life. I want updates. I care, you know, I've been called nosy and things like that, but it always comes from like a genuine place. So I kind of expect that back in return from, you know, my circle and from my village, which has been hard because a lot of people in my life don't give the same back. But I'm trying to learn that doesn't mean that they don't care, they're not invested, but their way of showing up for me is different. And I think that's hard too, because we always kind of, you want what you, you know, you want to have in return what you give out. And sometimes we don't get that. So I'm happy that you brought up, sometimes our village doesn't have to consist of hundreds of people. If we have a few, you know, great people that are really there for us, and that's the most meaningful. And I want to talk a bit about, I feel like people are probably listening and they're like, wow, great, you guys have an awesome friendship and you have so many wonderful people that care for you. But like, what if you don't have that? You know, I feel like when we post things on Instagram, the responses that we receive for like, I don't have a community, I don't have mom friends, I don't talk to my in-laws, I don't have a support system, like, how do I find that? So I wanted to talk a little bit about kind of how to grow a village and what we've done or what we think can be helpful.
So for me, it's been recognizing that my village wasn't going to be what I thought it was from the outset. Mm. If I were to take my family out of this, let's say I didn't have them, I truly would be pretty alone. And a couple of friends have really, really shown up and become family. I would say the best way to build your own village, and it does take some level, unfortunately, it's tough to say this because a lot of us don't have it, but it does take some emotional energy. We talked about this in a previous episode about friendships with Carly, is wherever you are showing up, whenever you do have that space to show up, whether it's at the park with other moms or in a play group, or you're reconnecting with an old friend who maybe just had a child herself, show up as genuinely as possible, because people feel that. And when they feel that, if they connect back with you, that's the start of that connection. And that only happens when we're true to ourselves, when we're honest, when we're showing up as real as we can, just as raw as we can. So it is a little disarming. It is hard to sort of drop the act. You know, we all kind of show up with a bit of an armor, a bit of a facade. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a part of our, you know, part of our society too. We do want to appear to have it all together. I think once you're able to be more vulnerable, your village will start to show up, because people connect with vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. And I think for me personally, the biggest way that I've been vulnerable is asking for help and offering help, because that's something, because I know motherhood can feel very lonely. We've both been there. And I think it's important to remember, just because it feels lonely doesn't mean that we have to do it all alone. And I know since my husband and I have lived far away for so long, we really did have this I can do it myself mentality. And we, you know, have never asked for help really with anything, so that when our daughter came, we were kind of like, we're going to continue to do this all by ourselves, because that's what we've done. And really over the last 3 years, I've started working on asking for and accepting help, because I have a lot of great people that will offer it, but I'll never accept it. And it's like, they wouldn't offer if they didn't want to help, but I just never want to feel like a burden to someone and make them feel obligated to help. And I know I've been in the position, unfortunately, where I've been taken advantage of by offering my help and doing a lot for people because I didn't want them to feel like them helping me was a burden. So I was like, if I help them as much as I can. So I just want to be cautious to never do that for somebody else, because I know how crummy that feels to have your, you know, your time, really anything, like your physical being, anything just taken advantage of. So I never want to do that for someone else. So I'm trying to think, I want to ask you, when's the last time you've asked for help? Like genuinely just needed a favor and reached out to somebody.
Oh, a lot of my favors are paid for.
That is so it's not, I wouldn't consider that a favor. Like if you're asking somebody, like when I wrote out that question, I was thinking of my own and I was like, oh, I asked the nanny to help us on this day because I had an appointment. Yeah. It's like, no, like I paid her. Like she, you know, like we have a great relationship. So I don't like being like, oh, I'm her employer, whatever. But like, I am like she, I asked her if she could do it. I paid her to do it. Like that's her job. So I'm like, oh, that's not really a favor if you're paying them. I don't think anyway.
No. And I'm still struggling with taking time for me without my son. We're together literally 24/7. I mean, he's my little like built-in buddy. So I haven't asked for that. You know what? I actually do know when the last time was I asked for a favor. My sister and my parents were here. We were all here in Sarajevo together in July. We were all here at the same time. And I did want to go out one evening with a friend. And I have not done that since Aiden was born. He's 20 months. I have not gone out with 22 months. Oh my God, he's 22 months. And I hadn't done that since he was born. And my sister was here. He's like the love of her life. And she's the love of his. So I felt comfortable asking her to spend a couple of hours with him so that I could go out. And I did. Thankfully, their time well spent. I don't even know that he cared that I was gone. He was so happy to be with her. But having that time away from me, not away from him, just away from that role, and remembering what it felt like to just be Adriana, the woman, and not just Adriana, the mom, was huge for me. It was like a relief. It was a relief to recognize that woman. It doesn't mean that I miss who I was before motherhood. I like who I am now as a mother more than I did before. But it was nice to know that those pieces of me that I loved from pre-motherhood still exist. They didn't go anywhere. They're just like taking a really long nap right now.
That's such a good way to look at it. And I'm thinking too, and I don't want to speak for you because I'm not a single parent, so I can't speak to that. But I'm thinking like the idea of having to be on 24/7, like I know – I don't want to say like when my husband comes home, I kick up my feet and I'm like clocking out, see you later. Cause I'm cooking dinner, I'm cleaning, I'm still doing I'm still doing responsibilities. But I'm trying to think like when I go off with one of my friends for like 2 hours and go putz around Hobby Lobby, I don't have to be on. Like I don't have to, like I'm obviously thinking about my daughter and my husband, like, oh, I wonder what they're doing. Did they go to that park or what did they do? But because I have so much trust and faith in my husband to parent, just like you have in your sister, because she kind of fills that role and, you know, is spending so much time with Aiden, that kind of like sense of relief and knowing that I have it, you know, more frequently than you do because you are on 24/7, like it, that's just that sigh of relief. And I hope with this episode, I want to encourage parents that if you haven't asked for help, even if it's something so small, like my last time I asked for help was when the people who spray our yard for like ticks and mosquitoes, they come every 21 days and they email me and they were coming on a Tuesday, which is like the one day no one's home all day. I probably shouldn't say that on like a big platform like this. Don't come to my house. We have a dog. We're here. But the doggy door stays open and I'm like, oh, I have to close that for the spray people. But then the dog's going to be locked in the house for 11 hours. Like that's a long way. So I texted my friend Devin and was like, hey, on your way to work, can you open the doggy door? And I was like, if you don't mind, if you think of it, if it's not too big of a deal. And she's like, yeah, not a problem. Like for her, she was like, why are you even asking? Why is this such a big thing? Like just text me and say, stop by my house and open the door. Like but for me it was, and I waited like a couple days and my husband's like, okay, if she can't do it, she's just going to say like, I can't, I have to be at work early. Like, but I feel like we fear so often that they don't want to help or they can't help. And that whole, like, I don't want to be a burden, but if you can't help.
Yeah. I think we have that sort of built-in guilt. We experience it a lot as moms. Mm-hmm. And so asking for help seems like this foreign concept. And I wish that it didn't have to be, but I have so much understanding for why we all feel that way. And motherhood.
And that's.
No, go ahead.
No, I wasn't saying that's why I try to show up so much for the people that do help me. Like, and I'll offer my help. Like, if I know, like, for that same friend, Devin, like, if I know that she's going to be away, I'm like, what days are you going to be back? Like, I'll come feed the cats, because I know, like, for me, that doesn't take much energy or effort. And I know that she appreciates it. And then I feel better when I have to be like, hey, can you open the doggy door? Rather than kind of helping and giving our energy to the people that don't give it back. I love just focusing on the relationships, whether it be friendship or your partner or really any relationships we have in our life, giving energy to the ones that kind of give it back, I think is so important.
Absolutely. And I think this brings us to like another really good point, which is that redefining the village can also mean subtracting from it. It can also mean like to take off of your plate what no longer belongs there. And I think that can sometimes almost be harder to do than to add, than to mm-hmm. seek connection. I think cutting ties can sometimes be really hard, even if it's necessary. Mm-hmm. There's kind of a grieving, healing process. There's, you know, at first just the realization that maybe someone no longer belongs in your life the way that they have. And I think that that's okay. And I'm not going to get into all the reasons. We know as moms what some of the reasons are why mm-hmm. someone might not belong in our lives. But a big one for me, I haven't cut anyone out of my life completely since becoming a parent. I've definitely given less energy and less time and less of my emotion to certain people because they were a drain. They were a drain, pure mm-hmm. and simple. It was a one-way relationship in which I found myself more anxious and nervous post connecting with that person much of the time than not. Mm-hmm. And if I'm being left less than, less than happy, less than just, I'm not saying a friend has to fulfill me every time we speak, and I'm here for my friends for whatever they're going through. It's a back and forth. I want to know that you're there for me. I'm definitely here for you. But if there are specific people in your life that are only taking, had a couple of takers kind of still lingering around, it was time to sort of turn down the volume on those connections, because now they're not just taking away from me, they're taking away from my son. And
I think while people are listening to this, they're probably thinking of someone in their life that is like that. And they're probably like, ooh, I need to evaluate that relationship.
And redefining a village can mean, can mean subtraction, and that's okay. And mm-hmm. once you kind of move through the discomfort of doing something like that, it doesn't have to be formal either. I think when people hear, us or anyone talking about it, it's like cutting someone off. You send them a text. It's like a breakup almost. No, it can literally just mean being less available. You don't have to announce being mm-hmm. less available. Becoming less available can just be a choice that you kind of assimilate into your own life. It's protecting your own time, and it's putting boundaries in place. And sometimes putting boundaries in place don't necessarily warrant a conversation. It can be something you do for you. It doesn't have to be formal on paper in a text or through a conversation, but it protects you. So mm-hmm. redefining your village, I think, can also mean sort of assessing who belongs in it and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm. I agree so much, because I really like to build deep friendships and relationships with the people around me. So when you feel like that's not being given back, I've had to do that a lot lately. And with one, it was kind of like what you're saying, made myself less available, because every time we spoke, it's what's going on in your life. And it was actually right after my husband had, was in his motorcycle accident, and nothing, the things that were getting brought up were very like surface level. Like, I don't care about those things. My whole world was just shattered. Why are you not asking how I'm doing? And I remember I reflected on it, and I was like, okay, not everyone has to be the friend that I am, but this is something like major. Like, this is something you ask about. And I think we focus so much on the people we have in our lives that we give oftentimes the energy to the wrong one. So I noticed that I was doing that. And I think it's important, like you mentioned, to get comfortable with being vulnerable, whether that means, adding or subtracting in your circle. And I know just some other tips I wanted to share is capitalizing on your children's activities. I know that's hard when our kids are really young, because you're not going to bring like a 7-month-old to the park or, go bowling or something like that. But now that my daughter's older, we go out and, she does soccer and we go camping. And just, I feel like having a child is such an easy way to start a conversation. And I know as a military spouse, like we often move around a lot. And before I had my daughter, I was like, how do I make friends? I'm going to be here for such a short amount of time. you know, I need right away, I need that instant village. And thankfully I was in school at the time with other military spouses and they like dive right in. They're like, all right, what's your biggest fear? What's your biggest regret? Who did you vote for? And how, like, you know, you really dive right in because we know we have such a short amount of time to build a relationship. So I still have that like embedded in me, even though we're not moving anytime soon. And it scares away people who aren't around the military. Like, oh my God, like, whoa, like you want to know about my childhood trauma right now, but like, what do you do for work? Like what, you know, how old's your daughter? And I'm like, oh, you know, you kind of dive right in because that's in our nature. And then I think another important tip is picking up your own hobbies and interests, because if we lose who are, you know, who we are as a person and we become just mom, we're not able to build relationships and connections outside of our children. And I think that goes back to me saying, you know, one of my closest friends isn't a mom. So, you know, a lot of our conversation is surrounded, of course, around motherhood and my daughter. But a lot of our conversation isn't, because we don't have that in common, which is fine. And I know, you know, and I hope and I pray one day we do. But right now it doesn't. And it's so nice to have hobbies and interests that aren't dependent on my daughter.
Yeah, I think definitely recognizing the friendships that we have with people that aren't parents are just as important. Like you said, it gives you that space to really connect with different parts of who you are, because motherhood can be, it's all encompassing. It really is. And it's sometimes hard to not separate from the role. We're never separate from it, but to find space for those other parts of you.
Mm-hmm. And it definitely, this was never meant to be done alone. We were never meant, you know, in ancient times, we were never meant to raise children on our own and be a one-man show. And I know oftentimes, even just this week, we saw a lot about moms feeling burnt out from being the default parent and them kind of always being on. And I think it's important to remember you do have a village. It may be very small. It may be one or two people, maybe people you haven't known your whole life. They're probably just as stressed out, burnt out, and tired as you are. But if they're there when you need them, it's okay to ask for help and it's okay to rely on them, because hopefully they show up for you at the times that you need it the most and you can do that in return.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We hope this has been a little bit helpful. And Amanda and I are going to be getting back to regular weekly recordings. We've kind of, I think, hopefully fingers crossed, sorted through some bigger life stuff in the last couple of weeks. I'm sure there'll be a lot more to come, Amanda, but we will.
That's life.
We will catch you guys next week.